What's going on, y'all? This is Mike Brown, and I just wanted to say thank you for tuning into the show. You know, y'all are here for me every week, getting me through these times, and I just wanted y'all to know that I'm here for y'all in whatever way you need. Please feel free to reach out on the social media, through email. Get in touch with me. I'm here for y'all. Know that none of us are going through this alone. Also, I just created a Patreon, so if y'all would like to subscribe to the Patreon, please do. I would love the support. Thank you so much. This is The Art of Letting Go.
Yo, what up? This is Mike Brown, and this is The Art of Letting Go. Today, I have a special guest in the building. Shoot, I think the last time I saw you was when you were in LA.
Right. Yeah. Correct.
Yeah.
That small outing, that very...
Yeah, and James was in there cutting up on the dance floor.
Exactly, that's why. That's the first thing I thought of. Man, bro, that night will forever be ingrained in my memory from that whole experience was epic, and I'll never forget that show. Shout out to James, bro.
Yeah, man. Shout out to James. Shoot, man, you mind introducing yourself to the people?
Oh, no, absolutely. So it is Byron Jasper, Dr. Jasper, a number of other random names my patients call me. Mike knows me as Byron. We go back like four flats on a Cadillac, but I'm actually a primary care physician in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, born and raised in Southern Louisiana, home of Louisiana to be exact. Went to Xavier with Mike, and the list goes on and on, but that's the short version.
Man, that's a trip. And it's dope because, yeah, we went to school together, but now seeing you with your own practice, and congratulations on that, by the way, but just like your journey, I'm very curious about all the in-betweens of like from finishing school to now being here. Like, was starting your own practice? And can you give us a little more information on that? Cause I'm not very familiar with the direct.
Absolutely. So the journey has been long and winding. If you ask anybody who's a physician, if the journey was ever short, it's definitely the exact opposite of short. So if you ever hear somebody say, oh, I went to med school and it wasn't that long of a process, they're lying, okay? unless they went to night school or something like that, because it's ridiculous how long it takes to become a full-fledged doc who does whatever you want to do, because most of the time you're in training and all that. So did the 4 years of undergrad, did med school right after that, an extra year on top of that to get a master's, then did residency for 3 years, left from residency for 2 years and went to DC. And in DC, I did two fellowships, which is that specialty training, came back to Baton Rouge and started working as a primary care doc. And among all of that stuff, I also started my own nonprofit, which is focused on getting more minorities into the medical field. So that's Comprehensive Medical Mentoring Program. We go by CMMP, and been working on that and doing the primary care side, but always in my mind said I wanted to open my own practice. Ever since I was actually an undergrad, I wanted to open my own practice. I just never knew when, what, where, or how, but I knew I was going to do it. And as I started doing a lot of my own primary care work under someone else's shingle, if you will, I said, I want to eventually break out on my own, but I'm waiting, you know, waiting for the right time. And I'm sure we can talk about this, but it's always, I'm going to get to it. I'm going to do it. It's going to happen. I just got to wait a little bit longer and longer and longer. And as I kept saying and doing that, it just kept being one of those, what's taking so long? So when I got to the mindset that I'm going to do it, it actually happened last year in November of 2019. I went to a conference in Orlando, and the conference was based on direct primary care. I had been studying the model for about 2 years, and I got to the conference and, you know, met a bunch of dope people, a lot of people of color who actually do this across the country well before I actually started. And they were like, bruh, you just got to do it. There's nothing that's going to be perfect. You just got to jump in. And as the new year turned, I was like, oh, you know what? I'm going to do it. I actually filed paperwork in the state of Louisiana and with the federal government in January. And my plan was to open by May. But something called the coronavirus came and threw a wrench in that. So, of course, I'm sitting on this idea of how I'm going to open. And everything keeps happening that tells me you don't need to open, right? You got people who are getting sick and clinics that are closing and small businesses that are shutting down and the cost of everything is going up because people aren't working. And I'm just sitting here like, I need to wait. I need to wait. I need to wait. And then lo and behold, I just said, you know what? If I keep waiting, it's never going to happen. So I just kind of went on ahead and said, I'm going to do everything I need to do to actually start. And there's still a bunch of stuff that's not in place. A lot of people won't know that. And this is actually exclusive for you. I'm still not completely everything worked out. Everything's perfect. All the stuff is in place where it needs to be. It is still a work in progress, but it's something that has to be done because if you wait for it to be perfect, it's never going to happen. So jumping into launching your own business, clothing line, open your own restaurant, whatever it may be, it's never going to be perfect. You just have to know where your limit is. At this point, I'm able to do it. And all the stuff that would go wrong, that's okay. I'm still going to keep moving forward because I'm still doing that every day, but I'm getting better by the day. And the last thing I'll say on this segment, because I think everybody needs to hear this. I would rather pour more blood, sweat, and tears into my own business than anybody else's. So if I'm going to do that, I'm going to literally stay up late. I'm going to wake up early. I'm going to grind. I'm going to do that for me because I'd rather bet on me than anybody else. So that's the part of the thing that woke me up, because as much as I was spending time doing work for everybody else, I'm like, if I did this for my own self, I actually don't think I can fail. And even if I do, I'd rather fail trying than to say shoulda, coulda, woulda. So that's how I operate every day. I'm waking up like, look, I got a ton of stuff to do, but I'm doing it for me. And that's the bottom line. And I think everything else will work itself out.
Man. And it's funny because you said so much, like you really were speaking to me, because like my journey has been the same thing, like just kind of just jumping into shit and just not even knowing. Like, you know, I talked to somebody last night about t-shirts and they was asking me like the quality of the shirt and all that. It's like, I got to start somewhere. Mm-hmm. I can't wait till I find that quality shirt, because I might be 20 years down the line and still haven't figured it out. So, man, like, I appreciate you sharing that. Mm-hmm. And it's dope to see you on your journey and even just pulling the curtain back. Like, yeah, I'm still figuring this out and I'm still doing it.
Yeah, I still don't have other things to kind of give people a sense of what I mean by it's not all worked out. So I've gotten a lot of people who say, where is the clinic located? I don't actually have a brick and mortar location right now. I'm actually operating, doing telemedicine visits and doing what we call old school medicine. I'm doing house calls. So I'm actually going to people's homes to give them medical care because I don't have a physical location because of a bunch of stuff falling through. I was going to lease this property and it fell through. I was going to lease this property and it fell through. I was going to purchase this property and it fell through. And it's one of those, every time something falls through, if you keep using that as a way to say, I got to wait, you're never going to get started. So that's part of the reason why I was like, look, if this last property don't work, I'm just going to do it without a property. So I just went ahead and jumped in and said, you know what? On September 15th, I'm launching. I told the people who knew I was working on it. I said, the 15th is the day. I said, I don't care what happens. The 15th is the day. And at that point in my head, that was the day I had to get all my stuff ready by the 15th. So still to this day, October 1st, when we're recording this, I still don't have certain stuff in place, but it's not going to stop the process. And that just means that when I do get the stuff in place, I've already did a bunch of the other hard work getting that stuff done. So it's not everything done at once. So some people might actually look at it and say, well, it's maybe a blessing to do stuff piece by piece as opposed to having the perfect picture. And I think that's a huge thing a lot of people don't understand. And altogether, if you're doing it in that way, as much as it's going to have things that go wrong, that's going to happen anyway, right? And you can probably testify to this to say, you know what? As many things as I've tried, something's going to go wrong. It's just life. So yeah, you just absolutely have to be ready to handle that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man. Is there any fear in like doing the house calls during COVID?
A lot, but I also think about it in the sense that if you are good at what you do, number one, you're going to find a way to work around things that could potentially go wrong, right? So if you're, you know, and I'm making this up, if you're a person who's a chef, you may not have all the utensils you need, but you're probably going to find a way to make a good dish. So for me, what I'm trying to do is say, look, I'm going to do house calls, but I ain't coming to everybody's house. Okay, let's get that straight. You got to make sure that we on the same page, that if I'm coming to your house, you're not thinking I'm about to come into a place where it's full of crime, it's not well lit, I'm not coming at nighttime and trying to be like, I got sense now, right? So people hear, oh, you doing house calls, you coming at, no. There's certain things that need to be made aware, you need to be made aware of, and we need to work out before I show up to your door. And if I don't feel comfortable, I'm not coming. And that's the way it is. And I think people don't realize that that's the way medicine used to be. Doctors didn't always have doctor's offices, right? It didn't used to always be a waiting room full of people. It would actually be your doctor coming to you when you were extremely sick. So I'm going to make it a point to try to make it where patients and I are on the same page. We have those home visits when it's needed, not just because you're bored and you don't feel like getting out your house. And at that point, we'll work out something that's going to make it to where I'm safe, you're safe, and we both are healthy and doing well. It's not just, you know, hey, let's show up to the person who obviously need to be in the hospital. No, we're not doing that either. Like I said, I got sense, right?
Right, yeah.
I went to school and got enough loans to know when something don't make sense.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. So altogether, I'll say the other thing about direct primary care, and I'm sure we can go into more detail, is that a lot of people have the misnomer that direct primary care is something similar to what we call concierge medicine. So concierge medicine is the idea that you have a patient who comes to your office or you do care for them, you bill their insurance, and you charge them a fee on top of that. So every time you might come to my office, I'm still gonna charge your insurance, but you're gonna pay an extra fee for me to give you extra services.
Okay.
Direct primary care is the exact opposite in that we do have a monthly membership fee, but we don't touch your insurance at all. We want you to have your insurance in case something happens. So basically, you're gonna pay a lot less in a direct primary care model than you would in concierge. And we also target the actual people who need care most, because concierge medicine is usually for people who have a lot of extra income.
Right.
Direct primary care is usually for people who don't. So a lot of people hear me doing direct primary care and they think, oh, well, he's taking care of all these fancy people. And it makes me laugh because I'm like, the people I have been taking care of since I've been a resident have been the Medicaid, underserved, uninsured population who barely got two nickels to rub together. And yeah. I'm not going to abandon those people now just because I'm doing my own thing. I'm actually trying to find a way to take care of people who have a little bit more so I can find a way to take care of those who don't have anything and offset those costs. So my roots are still there, but people are afraid because it's new. Everybody thinks insurance is the way to go. And what do you mean I don't need insurance and all that? So I'm speaking a whole different language and all of a sudden people are freaked out. But their early adopters are the ones that are going to be the people who benefit most. If I told you, Mike, right now, I could take you back in time and we could buy a share of Google for $100. Would you tell me, nah, you know what? I'm going to hold on. I'm going to just keep waiting. You're going to be like, let's get in this time machine.
Yeah.
So the early adopters are the people who look and say, this is different. Let me learn about it. I may not jump on right away, but I want to learn about it. The ones that are like, oh, congratulations, but we'll talk 10 years from now. They're going to be the ones that are like, man, I should have did that a long time ago. So I always encourage people to learn. You don't have to jump in, but do your research because you might surprise yourself.
Right. Mm-hmm. So do you feel like this is going to be like the new way of, like, I guess, healthcare?
Mm-hmm. I will say it's going to be an alternative for a lot of people who really and truthfully understand how it works.
Yeah.
Like, and again, let's think about it in a traditional sense in more practical terms. You got your gasoline cars, you got your electric vehicles. Who do you think drive the electric vehicles other than the people who got money? The people who understand that that vehicle is different, but it still does the same thing. It gets you from point A to point B. The way it works is just different. It's the same exact idea. Medicine is gonna be different models that work in different ways. You just have to find the one that works best for you. So I think this can work a lot better for people of color, people who have less resources, and people who are often disenfranchised by the medical system. And you'll say, what do you mean by that? When you go and bring your ass to the clinic and you sit there for 45 minutes and you complain about how long you waited, then you're waiting in the room for 30 minutes, then the doc shows up, stays in for 10 and you out. And all of a sudden you're like, I was here for 2 hours. I saw them for 10 minutes and then I get a bill. You complain about that on that day. But then whenever I come and say, you don't have to do that anymore, I got a better way for you. You're like, this insurance though sounds like it's really what I need. I'm like, man, look, y'all full of shit. until that moment when you complaining and you sick, and there's a bunch of other scenarios, right? Another scenario.
Yeah.
You're sick as a dog. You literally feel like utter shit. You need to see your doctor. You pick up the phone and call them, and how early can you get in? A week, 2 weeks, maybe three, depends on how busy the doctor is, if they're in the clinic that week. And at that moment, you're like, man, I need to go to urgent care. Urgent care is another fee. Or I need to go to the emergency room, another fee. Or I need to wait forever because I can't get in. Why are you complaining about all that when there is another way to do it? The issue is people don't think about that until they need to. They wait till they're sick, and that's when all of a sudden it's like, man, I should have did this other model. So I'm trying to get people to enroll before that happens, for one, so we never have that problem. But two, you see there are other ways to do this. So if you start to come out of the, all I know is insurance, all I know is how to use this insurance-based model, so that's what I'm gonna do. If you learn that these things exist, you may not choose to do it, but at least you know it exists, to where if you wanna make that move, you have more of a, all right, I learned about it, I think I'm ready.
Yeah.
But nobody wants to do the research. They want people to come to them, put it in a nice package, and then force feed it to them to make them do it. So I honestly will tell anybody, you included, even if you're not in the state with me, I'll have this conversation with you, because this model works so well for a lot of people. It ain't perfect for everybody, but a lot of people could benefit from it. And it's actually really, really, really popular in a lot of places, like California, like Washington State, like Kansas, Texas, all these other places. It's just certain states that haven't adopted it yet, but there are a lot of people who are actually doing it across the country.
Why did you do it in Baton Rouge as opposed to going somewhere else?
Yeah, for me, like I said, I'm from Southern Louisiana. So it's, for me, it's home, right?
Yeah.
And I've had that conversation before. I went to DC, and of course everybody's like, why wouldn't you live in DC? DC was dope. I love DC. DC had great entertainment. There was always something to do. A lot more progress had been made in DC than I had ever seen in Louisiana. But why did I come back? Because I always have felt that if you see there's a problem, but instead you walk away, you're a part of the problem. Yeah. So why not actually try to get your hands dirty and fix the problem that you constantly complain about? So if I complain about how bad the care is in Louisiana, and I have the opportunity to fix the care, but I instead go to DC and stay there where things are quote unquote better, how am I actually fixing anything? So I actually said, you know what? I could go to a different place where it's probably easier to get off the ground. And I knew it was gonna be hard as hell to do this in Baton Rouge. But I said, I'd rather try and make it somewhere, make it happen somewhere where I know it's not going to be easy, but it's needed, it's necessary. And people understand that a lot better when you hear that story, as opposed to, well, I read your website, it looks real nice. Or my favorite, man, I saw it on Instagram, congratulations. And I've literally sent messages to tons of people. I'm like, hey, you saw me on Instagram, you're constantly talking about how you don't have any good care. Why don't you come and, you know, talk to me so we can talk about your care? I'll consider it. Wait, so you're telling me that you rather stick with where you're at, and when I'm here in front of you telling you I got better care, I got better stuff for you, you don't want to do it. And that's why I say it. It's just one of those, you got to make it a thing in your mind to get these things done. And when you get them done, I think more people are going to appreciate it.
Absolutely. And you know, like, people, it's hard for people to believe in something when they don't believe in themselves.
Well, yeah.
So like, you know, to tell somebody like, this is my dream, is hard for them to adapt to when they didn't dream it, you know?
So exactly.
That's dope.
But let me ask you this. Ask you this. And I'm gonna ask you, because you're in the artistic side of things.
Yeah.
I know your stuff is way more difficult than mine. So if you, somebody who's making beats, putting music out, and doing a good job on all of your stuff and putting your blood, sweat, and tears into it, how many people are gonna jump up and say, you know what? I know this cat who's doing music and I went to school with him. Let me hit him up before they say, so-and-so dropped a CD. Let me go ahead and spend my last $20 for that. I'm like, come on. You telling me the people that you done grew up with are gonna run to the store and talk to this stranger and grab their music before yours? Like, it makes no sense.
It doesn't. But I can definitely relate to it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, you know, that's why it's like, you just got to keep going, man, because Like, you don't have no control over that. And it's okay. And it's one of them things, because I ain't gonna lie, it used to get me mad and it used to like hurt my feelings.
Oh yeah.
Like, it don't matter, because a lot of times people don't, like I said, people don't be chasing their own dreams.
Yeah.
And you know, once you start moving with that purpose, like I said, like just from what you're doing, I could already tell what you're doing. But man, moving in that purpose, it start drawing the people to you that supposed to be with you. And then like you almost forget about those people that, and not forget about them, but you just don't even think about, damn, like this month, like you ain't support my,
right,
you know, and that's, yeah, man, but it takes some work to get there too. It definitely takes some work, because the grind, the solo grind is not easy at all.
It's the purpose. That's the thing I think me and you are agreeing on. If you have the right purpose for what you're doing, you could care less who's with you.
Yeah.
Because when you're doing it for you, the people who are supposed to be with you are going to come. The people who you think should be with you may show up. They may not. They're going to call you when it's convenient. They're going to show up when they need something. Versus the people who say, you know what? I see what you're doing. I see your grind. I see your passion. How can I help? How can I be down? That's the people that really and truthfully see that you're doing it for your own purpose. So I agree with you. When you got that purpose, it doesn't matter. And that's why I said, it makes me laugh when I hit people up and I say to them, and I'm sure people might hear this and they might actually get in their feelings, and that's cool. Hopefully they'll feel some kind of way for about 10 minutes and then they'll feel better later. But either way, my answer has always been, when you literally know what you're doing and how you're doing it, you could care less who you piss off, because you know you're good at what you're doing and you're doing it for the right reason. So I ruffle feathers all the time. And that's part of the reason, as we said before we started recording, what I said, I know my temperament wasn't going to be really good for me to work for people for too long. I was like, I got to work for myself, because stuff pisses me off so regularly. I'm just like, why does this keep happening? And then I realized, I was like, because you're not supposed to be here. You're supposed to be on your own journey. You're supposed to be in your own drive. So that's why it's irritating you. You can't fix the system, so make your own damn system. And that's what I'm going to do.
And that's to accept that and then follow it.
Oh yeah.
Like, that takes a lot of courage. Mm-hmm. So man, like, I definitely commend you for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's keeping you motivated right now?
I mean, it's weird, right? And people will talk to me, and it depends on the person, right? If a person knows me well, I would say irritated by a lot of stuff to me that doesn't need to happen the way it happens, right? Like, and it's crazy. In the medical field, the amount of racism and mistreatment of people, you know, before George Floyd was a common household name, before Breonna Taylor, before Ahmaud Arbery, before Freddie Gray, all of these people who had to obviously lose their life to get some type of attention to this movement, before all that, there was so much stuff going on in the medical field. And the easiest one that I constantly point out is the Tuskegee experiment.
Definitely.
If you don't know about the Tuskegee experiment, you need to go ahead and hit pause and pull up your Google and read and then come back to us. But the Tuskegee experiment is one of the most atrocious things I have ever heard in life. 40 years of experimenting on Black people.
That's why I'm scared. I
thought it was a thing until potentially somebody had to come 40 years later and say, you know what, this probably isn't right. Like, what the hell, right? And I was just sitting there saying that at this point, that's the stuff that motivates me. Just to, you know, answer your question, I'm sure we'll circle back to it, but that kind of thing is what drives me, because our people don't deserve that. They deserve people to say, you know what, I know we can do better for ourselves, so let me find somebody who can do that, and I want to be that person.
Man, like, hearing you mention that makes me think about this COVID vaccine. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious to know how, like, just what you feel, because I know they said it's not a whole lot of Black people that's signing up for it, you know, but like, what do you think? Like, should we, should we not? I mean, I don't plan on doing it.
It's tough. It's tough. As a medical professional, the part of me that's medical is like, we need to do it. But then the part of me that's Black is like, yeah, we probably want to wait a little bit. So it's always that duality that I have to tiptoe, right? Like, trying to educate Black people on why vaccines are important, but also knowing how the medical system has treated us and basically used us and spit us out and left us out to basically die. It's one of those, like, yeah, I kind of understand why you don't want to actually mess with this, right? So I have to figure out that way to kind of say, where's that line of, this is where I would say you can get to and it's safe. But then beyond this, I think you have to kind of say, huh, let's kind of wait a little bit. So as far as the vaccine goes, I understand why they want more minority people to enroll.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I understand as well. Yeah.
Yeah, you need more of a general makeup of the population to see if it works right in this population, this demographic, this age group, and all that. But I also understand people reluctant to do it because they don't want to have a bad outcome. So yeah. I think it's one of those, if I had to give a statement, it would be, if you feel that you're of sound health, age, whatever you want to call it, and you actually want to see if this is going to help people that are going to look like you, be in your neighborhood and all that, then I'd say I would recommend it. But if you got medical issues, you got a lot of things that are not controlled, you don't take care of yourself, I'd probably say, nah, you may want to wait a little bit because you don't want to set yourself up for a negative outcome based on you not really doing a good job of taking care of yourself prior to getting the vaccine. But if you're a healthy person, you eat right, you follow up with a doctor, you do a really good job, usually, again, I use the word usually, vaccines are actually really one of the safest things that can be done. But of course, you obviously got to learn how to read between the lines. If stuff don't sound right, don't feel right, you can just walk away. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. How do you feel, like, just being in the medical field, how do you feel about, like, some of the holistic healings? Like, you know, being out here, I kind of dabble in some of that world of, like, getting, like, a Reiki healing and stuff like that. But how do you feel about some of that stuff?
I think it has a purpose. I mean, honestly, it's cultural, right? A lot of times people indulge in certain things from a holistic approach because it's either how they were raised, they've had an experience, and it's actually been beneficial. So my job oftentimes is not to disavow people when they walk in and say, oh, I'm using this, and be like, oh, don't do that. It's my job is to understand where is the approach that they're coming from, and then the science behind the approach. So holistic medicine actually has some science behind it. A lot of people don't realize it. It's just the gap that happens is that how much science actually goes into it. And what do I mean by that? If you're actually studying and looking at something and it can be proven consistently, that's when you talk about science. A lot of times people will have a good outcome and it happens because of a bunch of other stuff. And they often think that it had to be from the one thing that they're banking on. And that can actually not be a great thing. So you have to be very careful with that because a lot of people won't actually understand that that one supplement they took wasn't the reason they got better. It's because of a bunch of other stuff. So you want to have that science into it. And if the science is there, I think you're fine. And even if it's not the most common sold in the Walmarts and all of this, I'm not against it. I just want to understand it. And if I understand it better, I think we can do a better job of taking care of folks where they're at, as opposed to feeling like they always got to take this pharmaceutical type medication.
Man, I feel that.
Yeah, yeah.
And speaking of pharmaceutical medications, because I know that I saw that you were doing some work with like HIV and AIDS, and being that like a good amount of my audience is of the LGBT community.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on PrEP, Truvada? And for the listeners, it's a... what'd you call it? Like a HIV prevention?
Yeah. So PrEP is pre-exposure prophylaxis. There's also something called post-exposure prophylaxis, which I definitely want to talk to you about because it's a thing that a lot of people don't even know exists. And as much as people know about PrEP, a lot of people don't know about PEP. So PrEP is what you take prior to having an exposure to prevent you from getting HIV. I'm a huge, huge advocate of PrEP. The LGBTQ community that I take care of, a lot of them are on PrEP, and if they are HIV positive, they're on their medicines that often have PrEP within it. Because PrEP is actually two HIV medications that they found if you take it prior to exposure, it will basically prevent you from getting the virus in your system, allowing that virus to make copies, and then it stays in your system and we can't get rid of it. So basically the virus still comes into the system, but it, in essence, kills the virus so it doesn't make copies of itself. Now, that's very similar to something called a vaccine, which is funny because people will actually do certain things to prevent stuff, but don't take vaccines, which is funny. But anyways, the PrEP medication, which is going to hopefully expand to where it's not just the one medicine. It's actually, Truvada is one version. The new version of Truvada is called Descovy. So that's the other version. So those two are in play. The idea of PrEP is really helpful because it helps to keep people from getting HIV with condom use, right? A lot of people don't often think about condom use, but it's a huge thing. You know, as much as I want to tell people take PrEP and that's it, you got to use condoms with it. So I highly, highly advocate for people who need it to be on it. And then people who don't realize they need it, I actually put them on it. I'll tell you a quick story. And this is how bad it is for a lot of people. I had a young lady, 24 years old. This was this week. And you can ask some of the people I talked to on the phone. The lady told me, I don't want to take PrEP because it gives people HIV. And we asked her, how do you come up with that? She said, I saw it on YouTube.
Oh, wow.
Where on YouTube? Have no idea. And then her words after that were, and I quote, I don't need to take it because I'm not high risk. Now, the word high risk is words we use to define who probably is going to be at risk for getting HIV. The right. category is broad, but if you have a history of STDs of any kind, you are high risk. This young lady had multiple, but in her mind, that doesn't count. So the idea of miseducation is out there, and people often get confused about PrEP and how it works and all that. But hear me when I say it's very effective. There are very minimal side effects. The biggest barrier to PrEP is the cost. If the cost was not so expensive, it would probably be a lot more, what's the word, available, I guess, if you would say. And really quickly, PEP, post-exposure prophylaxis, is if you feel you have been exposed to someone who has HIV, no matter if you know it or not, you going to a place that offers PEP within 72 hours, 3 days, if you say I had an exposure and you go in 3 days to get post-exposure and you start on treatment, it could potentially eliminate you going from an exposure to HIV to being HIV positive.
Wow.
So there's actually a window by which if you're exposed and you start the medicine for post-exposure, you can basically go from, hey, I've been exposed, but I was able to eradicate it before I ended up being positive and can't get rid of it. So
wow.
A lot of people don't know that. And it's funny because I actually work right now, at least for another couple of weeks, as a teacher of physicians. I am a family med faculty, so I teach residents who are in training. You know how many people I have explained that post-exposure prophylaxis is a thing and they're like, wait, what? And they're medically trained.
Yeah, so I never heard of it.
Right. And that's what I'm saying. So there's nothing wrong with it, for lack of a better term, the lay person hasn't heard of it, because most lay people don't know these, you know, you're not supposed to know everything medical, right?
Right.
But I have doctors who will have people come in and say, oh, well, so-and-so had a sexual encounter and a condom broke, so we're going to check them for pregnancy. And I'm like, did you check them for HIV? Oh, no, we didn't do that. Okay, well, what about post-exposure prophylaxis? Oh, what's that again? And I'm like, wait, what? Like, are you serious right now? So in this last 2 to 3 months, we've put several young ladies on post-exposure because they had a fear of being pregnant. And because of that, we ended up saying, you know what? This is something we should potentially consider as well. And by doing it, we hopefully avoid someone being HIV positive. Now, do I say that because everybody needs to go run and get post-exposure prophylaxis? No. Does everybody need to go and be reckless and say, well, as long as I get in within 72 hours, I'll be good? No. The goal is to say, if I need it, it's there. And to be smart and use condoms and have safe sex and all of that good stuff. And if you're extra prepared by using pre-exposure, we don't have to worry about the whole 72-hour window because you're preparing yourself prior to those exposures.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Man, I've always wondered, because I do take PrEP, but I always wondered, why don't they push PrEP to heterosexual people?
Mm-hmm. I think it just depends on where you're at, to be honest with you.
Okay.
If it's down in the South, okay, so again, you know I'm in Louisiana, so
yeah.
Lord. That's all. Trying to explain this to some of the people down here of how it works is like pulling teeth, right? There's okay. So many misconceptions behind it. But if you're in places like Cali, in D.C., Baltimore, like these places where people get it, a lot of those things have actually grown to where their campaigns, like Chicago, I think, was the first city across the country that had a citywide campaign to start getting PrEP into the hands of people who need it.
Wow.
And it was literally like billboards, bus stops, slattered on the side of buses, like you name it. They had commercials, they had hubs, they had phone numbers, and they did a huge campaign because they knew HIV was a thing. They're trying to keep people from becoming positive because that's a whole nother animal in itself. Yeah. And that was more of an effort for public health, preventative measures to stop people from getting sick. But down here, in an area like Baton Rouge or New Orleans, where we are in the top five in the country, and I'm gonna say that again, the country, not the state, because people think I'm confused. New Orleans and Baton Rouge, whose population is minimal compared to a Los Angeles, compared to a Seattle, they are in the top five of HIV and syphilis and all this, but we don't have those campaigns. Why? Because the people who are often in the seats that need to make decisions about things like this are either like, I don't want to have that conversation because we're in Louisiana. In Louisiana, that's not acceptable, right? But it's here. What you want to do about it? You're going to tell me we're just going to wish it away? It ain't working yet. So the idea is PrEP is actually a big thing with people who know how to use it, who know when it's appropriate, who know where to use it, how to get it. Like, I talk about it all the time. I'm sure my residents hate every time I talk about it. Like, they get irritated when I'm like, did you talk about PrEP? And they're like, oh, I forgot. I'm like, look, you need to either talk about it or I'm going to talk about it. Yeah. Because the goal is to get people to not get sick. If you are in primary care and you're trained the right way, your goal is to keep people healthy. It's not to give them care when they are sick. And that's the way the medical system is built in this country. It's built on people getting sick and then we treat them. We then give them a big ass bill. And then we tell them, well, what do you want us to do? You were sick. How about we put more money into prevention, into the people who actually are on the front lines that prevent people from getting sick? And maybe you'll change the way things actually happen, right? Maybe you'll start to see a lot of the numbers decline as opposed to thinking they're maintaining or going up.
Yeah, man, it's a trip. Like I'm even thinking like, you know, when I was living in the South or growing up in the South, it just wasn't something that was really talked about at all.
Oh man, I have patients whose family members is still that old stuff you see on TV and movies. You're like, oh man, I lived in such and such and my family doesn't talk to me. No, this is real. I have patients who flat out are like, I can't go home because my family doesn't want me in the house. And I'm like, why? And they'll tell me the stuff and I'm just like, man, it's heartbreaking. And I'm doing my very best to kind of, you know, be an advocate, but there's only so much I can do. But it's really sad because imagine the person you come to, your clinician, is the same type as your family who doesn't have any sense about this lifestyle. Yeah. You go to your physician and say, hey, Dr. Smith, I want PrEP. And they're like, what's PrEP? Like, you know more about PrEP than the doctor. Like, are you serious? Right? So it's one of those things where I constantly am advocating all the time for my patients to learn. And I love to educate people. I'm a teacher unofficially and officially for a number of reasons. And talking to people and explaining to people so they learn, I tell them, hey, if I do that and I teach you the right way, if I'm not around, you're going to know your stuff well enough to when you go to the next person, you know it ain't full of shit. You know what I mean? Yeah. So that's always why I'm like, if we do a good job of educating patients, meeting them where they are and teaching them what they should or shouldn't do, the rest of the stuff will work itself out, in my opinion. But obviously, everybody don't think like that.
Yeah. Now, even as I'm listening to you talk, I'm like, man, what advice would you give to, not even doctors that are already doctors now, but people that are trying to become doctors, like, what advice could you give them to, like, you know, create a safe space for their clients to, their patients to be able to just express that? Because I was thinking about that, like, with my heterosexual doctors, I didn't feel comfortable even like asking for an HIV test or an STD test, you know, just for the simple fact, not wanting to be judged.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, this is a tough thing to tell a patient that they should feel comfortable on every level with their physician, because it's sometimes just not realistic. But I'm gonna tell you the thing I tell a lot of people, if you with your physician and you don't feel like you really getting the answers or the care you need to find a new physician. And a lot of people don't like that, especially physicians. I'm in a meeting with a bunch of them and they like, well, we shouldn't badmouth each other. I'm like, I don't know who to, and of course I said it to myself, but I was like, I don't know who, because if y'all suck, I'm going to say y'all suck. I'm sorry. Our people been getting messed over too long for me to be nice and say, well, he's a good doctor when he sucks. Right. Yeah. So I'm usually the person that's like, you better stop going over there because he obviously ain't doing a good job. And I have there's a doc out here who basically is supposedly a pain management doctor. And anytime we send Medicaid patients to him because he takes Medicaid, he treats them like shit. And yeah, they constantly keep sending people to him. I'm like, don't send nobody up there. You want him to drive to go to a place where the doctor treats him like shit? Like, it makes no sense. So my biggest thing is to say to patients, first and foremost, you got to find somebody you connect with. Yeah. It's hard to do. And a lot of people don't like, for lack of a better term, finding new doctors. But I honestly put it in layman's terms of, if you had a barber and your barber fucked the way up, how many times would you go back and get another cut? If you had a mechanic who messed your ride up, your brakes gone, your engine shot, how many times are you going back? But with doctors, we keep going back.
Now you're right about that, yeah.
Yeah, you know, misdiagnosed, mistreated, spoken to in a weird way, not getting the care we believe we deserve. And all of a sudden we just keep showing up. So I think when you find that connection, you will know, because you're going to feel like you can talk about anything. You can have an honest conversation. You're not going to get judged. And more importantly, you probably will have more confidence when you leave the doctor than you did before you went in. And I think that's what you're looking for, and you'll know when you have it. And if you aren't sure, I always say, ask the people who have good doctors what they get. Not just ask for the name, but ask them, why do you like this doctor? And if the answer is, he on my insurance card, stop. Right? Like, throw the insurance card away. Like, that's what I'm going to say, right? Because I've heard all kind of answers. Like, why do you go to this doctor? Well, he's by my house. Or my dad said I go here because, you know, that's who he sees. And it has nothing to do with the doctor. It has to do with everything but the doctor. So if you say, why do you come to see Dr. Jasper? I want you to say, he listens. He's good. He explains it well. He's knowledgeable, right? Now, you may say he talks too much, because I do run my mouth a lot, right? Like, that's part of the reason why I'm going to direct primary care, because we got long appointments. I talk all the time. I talk way too much. So I want you to be able to say that, right? I want you to be able to say, I know my doctor. He's really cool. He's understanding. He's funny. Like, something that explains a characteristic that makes you proud to refer me, right? It ain't because his coffee is really good in the waiting room. Like, that foolishness that I hear people say. So as long as you have that vibe, you're going to want to go to the doctor. You're going to want to go to see your doctor. It shouldn't be, oh, I got to go to the doctor today, right? It should be, I'm ready, right? I'm happy because my doctor's cool and I know I'm going to be healthier when I leave, right? Yeah. She will take care of me better than I think I can take care of myself. And that vibe, you know, it doesn't always have to be what you have in your mind is the right type of doctor. Some doctors are going to be better than you have the misconception it is, right? A lot of times people always think it has to be a male. Not true at all. Some of the best doctors I know are female, 10 times better than males, right? And if your doctor, last point, I'm sorry, again, I can go all on for days. The last point is, if your doctor is so smart that they never are wrong, again, get another doctor. If your doctor is not humble enough to say, I made a mistake, I messed up, I forgot to call you back, I was supposed to send your script, but I forgot. If they can't do that, you got a bad doc. And I'm going to be honest with you, because people don't realize we're human too. Yeah. Dr. Jasper makes mistakes all the time. And as I make mistakes, I try to constantly tell patients, I'm human. I don't know everything. And I don't have all the answers, but I'm going to work my ass off to make sure I get you the best care you can. And I feel like if you have that humility and that drive and that connection, everything else is going to work itself out. Right. Because I have patients who call me and say, before they get anything else done, I need to talk to my doctor first. Right. You know, that kind of feeling you have when a person says, I can't make no decision until I talk to my doctor. That tells you you're doing something right. And that's how I know my mindset and what I'm doing makes a difference. It's not just because I got a huge paycheck because I see the most patients. You know, that bullshit that the insurance companies tell us to do because they want us to see 30 people in a day because that means you're productive. No, that just means you see a lot of goddamn people. That's what that means.
That's real, man. I had a couple of more questions for you. You were in undergrad or in med school during Katrina?
I was a senior the year Katrina happened. It was I was on campus for 1 week, okay, and then came back and had to leave. So yeah, senior, 05.
Wow. What advice would you give to somebody in school right now during the pandemic?
Yeah, honestly, it's hard because it's almost one of those things like you don't know what's coming next. And the way the pandemic is going, it's up and it's down and it's up and it's down. But the one thing I'd say consistently is, again, find the purpose of what you're doing. If you're going to this school because someone told you to, you're probably not going to get a lot out of it right now other than a bill. So my goal is to make sure I tell the students I talk to all the time, if you're doing it for the right reason, you're doing it because you want to, you're doing it because the reward is going to be there, you're going to push through. It may not come in the form that you want it, but it is going to happen when it's supposed to. So I constantly want people to remember to persevere, to continue to push hard, and remember that at the end of the day, you're doing it for the right reason. And even if it doesn't make sense, it'll work itself out.
Yeah. Right?
Don't ask me what I was thinking my senior year when I was literally back home trying to figure out what I was going to do for a semester because our school was underwater, right? So I was just like making it up as I go. But it worked out because I knew what I wanted to do and I knew what my purpose was. And I ended up being, you know, I did very well to the point where it worked out. So don't have to have it all written out for you. It's going to be fine.
Yeah. That's what's up. Mm-hmm. What is the key to getting through med school? How did you get through it?
That's a beautiful question and a good question. And I'm going to tell you, if you ask 30 people that, you can get 30 different answers. You might have some commonalities, but it's going to be different. How I got through was, again, remembering why I did it. There are plenty of times where I wanted to give up, plenty of times where I should have probably given up. The story that everybody knows, that knows me well, or who has kind of followed my trajectory, if you will, career, whatever you want to call it, I almost flunked out of medical school. I literally was on probation in medical school because we have to pass a test called Step One. And Step One is the test by which it tells you what you're going to be when you get out of medical school, because it tells you how smart you are, if you will. I failed that test 3 times.
Wow.
3. Now, also, I'm gonna put you on game how funny this is. I'm laughing about it now. In the past, I'd be in tears. But literally, Step One cost about $500 to sit for the exam. And it's about an 8-hour test. So I literally had to pay about $2,000 just to get through this exam because I had to sit for it 4 times. And on top of those 4 times, 8 hours per exam. So think about 4 days of my life was spent on that one test, not to count all of the studying that goes into it, which is a whole nother story. So if I would have to tell people who have either went through that or are going to go through that, if I can make it, anybody can make it. And people are like, oh no, you real smart and all that. Maybe so. But the other part that got me through was I remembered why I did it. If I failed the first, second, and third time and I didn't quit, the only way they were going to stop me is to drag me out that goddamn school. Right? They're going to have to say, look, security is here. You either go leave or we're going to throw you out. Because I wasn't leaving. I was not going to leave unless they made me. And I was like, look, I'm going to figure it out or you're going to put me out. And if you have that mindset, it's going to work. It's just, again, you got to have that drive. And a lot of people get discouraged. And I understand it. That's why we did CMMP. We're basically a huge family of a lot of minority docs and physical therapists and dentists, like all the healthcare people you can imagine. We want people to come join this big group just so we can learn, you know, get the next generation the confidence, the resources, the things they need to not run into those walls and give up. Because I had a mentor, and it wasn't really a true mentor, but the guy who was in my life at the time was a doc, and he told me what I was doing that made me fail. And that one little piece of game that he actually gave to me made me pass that one time. It just took one person to give me the right information. Mind you, I had a bunch of people around me who knew I failed three times and didn't give me the right information. So having that mentor in your life will get you there. And that advice is, you got to find those mentors. You got to have that drive. You got to stay committed. You're going to have obstacles, and some of us are going to have more than others. But if you are determined and you put the work in, it will work out. I have a bunch of students who I know and have gotten into medical school based off of me trying to help and point them in the right direction. All they needed was the assistance. And I will also put a plug in for people who aren't medical. You don't have to be not, you don't have to be a medical person or personnel to be a part of CMMP. We want everybody, because you, the teacher, may be able to help us find the resources for a scholarship to get this student through school. Yeah. You ain't got to be a medical person to look up a scholarship, but we need that, because some of us, Mike, tell me if I'm lying, need financial assistance to get through school, because last I checked, I ain't got a rich uncle, okay?
Yeah, definitely.
My people ain't left me a couple million. So if I would have had scholarship assistance, it would have made a huge difference.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, because people don't also know this, or some people do. I actually DJed in medical school to pay some of my bills. Wow. I bought turntables and learned or taught myself how to be a makeshift DJ to pay some bills in medical school, because when I was on probation, my financial assistance stopped. So I had to make ends meet, study, and spin records. And people don't realize that it's, oh, Dr. Jasper, you're so successful. Man, look, if you know what I've been through, you know my drive is insane, because you know how much stuff could have stopped me and I'm still here? Again, they're gonna have to drag me out this mud, right? Like, it's insane the amount of stuff that people think and get that misconception. So altogether, that long drawn out story is me saying, if you really want it and you have the mindset, you're going to find a way. And a lot of us want you to find that way, and we're going to help you. You just need to get off your ass and be humble enough to ask for help, because a lot of us don't want to do that either, right? We're going to do it ourselves, right? That don't work, okay? It don't work all the time. You might be successful the majority of the time, but eventually you're going to need help. So how about you get the help early? And stop waiting until you get into, oh, I'm in dire straits, my back's against the wall, I ain't got no money. Like, don't wait until that. Come find us early. And that's where we're at with CMMP. And even with Bija Clinic, like I said, those two things, they're synonymous in different arenas, but they are based, they're built on the same thing. I want to help you before you get into trouble. Yeah. So when you need something, you already know where to go. Not, oh, I wish I would have did this 3 years ago. I wish I would have did it before I got sick. Do it now. And come see us. And you definitely come see me. I'm definitely, as you can tell, I can talk all the day.
That's what's up, man. And I got one more question for you.
Yeah, yeah.
One piece of advice or one life lesson that you could share with the listeners.
Yeah. So I'd say be you. Okay. And that sounds real simple, but it's one of the things that's tough for a lot of people. One, because they're finding themselves, but two, they're afraid of what people are going to say when they become themselves, right? They're worried about what people are going to think. I have never been that person. And a lot of times people see me and they think I'm really buttoned up, right? They really feel like, well, Dr. Jasper was always so put together. Like, I'm probably the exact opposite. But the difference is I'm not doing that with everybody. But if you get around me and you get me into a safe space, I'm going to be me. So I try to encourage people to practice medicine how you want, make music how you want, cook how you want, do the things that you want to do to express who you are. And as you do that, when you're authentic, authentic stuff will find you, right? Your purpose will find you. The people who are supposed to be around you will find you. So be you, and remember that you're here for a reason, and you're going to change somebody's life if you are authentic, hardworking, and do the things you're supposed to do.
Man, Byron, thank you so much for sharing that. I really do appreciate that.
Yeah, yeah, man, my pleasure.
Where can the people find you?
Yeah, so plenty of places, but the main places. So on Instagram, which a lot of people will find us, and I say us because it's usually a huge, huge village of people with me. Our Instagram handle for CMMP is at CMMPMED, so at CMMPMED. We have a website, www.cmmpmed.org, and that's the Comprehensive Medical Mentoring Program, the nonprofit. The clinic, we are at Byja Clinic, BYJA Clinic on Instagram, and website is www.byja.org, and my own personal Instagram is at Dr. DRB Jasper.
That's what's up, man. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, man. Yeah, anytime. And as I said, I do talk a lot, so I apologize.
No, you good.
But if you got anything you need from a health standpoint, anything I can help with, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart, I'm always wanting to educate folks on how to do health and just simple stuff, whether it's blood pressure, men's health, whatever. Man, hit me up. You always got a friend in me, and you always got an advocate in me, even if it's, you know, LGBT, whatever. If I can help, let me know.
That's what's up, man. Yeah, we definitely going to do some things for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But thank you. And again, keep doing you. Side note, this man is a grinder. Again, I told him I may not actually be on social media doing the most, because that's just not my personality. I'm not a big social media on there all the time, but I do pay attention. I actually listen to these clips, and some of these clips, I'd be like, oh snap, they just said a word. I'm ready. Like I'd be watching, I'd be listening. I'd be, you know, I may not get all of it, but I'm definitely with it, man. I'm watching. So keep doing you, keep grinding. You're making a difference whether you know it or not. And even if you don't have as many people who come, they're going to follow eventually. So keep doing you, man. I'm a huge supporter. I'm a huge fan.
I appreciate that, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah, brother.
And thank y'all for listening. This is Mike Brown, and this is The Art of Letting Go. Peace.
Thank you for tuning into this week's episode of The Art of Letting Go. If you like what you heard, please be sure to subscribe to us wherever you listen to this podcast and leave a comment. Let us know what you think. Let other people know what you think as well. If you want to get in touch with us, hit us up on all social media at The Art of Letting Go Podcast. Also, you can send me an email, theartoflettinggopodcast@gmail.com, or give us a call. Leave a message. We might play it on the show. 213-394-2773. Also, if you would like to support The Art of Letting Go, we got some really cool merch, as well as we're now on Patreon. You can find us, The Art of Letting Go Podcast. Subscribe to us. Thank you guys for listening. This is Mike Brown, and this is The Art of Letting Go.